Climate change is the number one threat to affordable housing. Climate change is the number one risk factor to the mortgage banking industry, yet nobody wants to talk about it. That shit ends now. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children 18 plus, you are tuned in to the Loan Officer Podcast with me, Dustin Owen, and my main man,
JC
John Coleman.
Dio, what is popping?
Dude,
whoa.
Wow. Easy. I tried to say dude.
Yeah.
Beyonce. Okay. Beyonce, you know Beyonce?
I've heard of
married
her.
To Jay-Z.
Allegedly.
Was once a part of Destiny's Child.
Kind of. Yeah.
Okay. In her new
country.
Do you call it an album? Do we still call them albums? What do you call them? CDs? Tracks?
Yes. Do you watch TV? Do you call them programs?
I have no idea. Shows. I call them shows. But in her latest collection of music that she released all at the same time.
Yeah, I don't listen, but go ahead.
Okay. No, she has lyrics that point towards climate change, Fannie Mae, and home affordability.
No, she doesn't.
Beyonce knows all about today's episode.
Beyonce Knowles.
Oh, boom, boom. I like that. So Beyonce is in the know.
Okay.
She's also in the Knowles.
Yes.
But not the Seminoles.
Yes.
The Knowles that start with the K.
Yes.
So Beyonce is in the know, but so few.
Yeah.
Home buyers. Mm-hmm. By the way, woohoo, home buyers for you. Real estate agents, mortgage industry professionals.
Yeah.
We ain't going to have the answers. I don't have solutions. But at a minimum, pull your head out of the sand.
Okay.
Open your eyes and listen.
Okay.
Our buddies up at Bank of England would say your earballs.
Oh, yeah.
Open up your earballs.
Okay.
Okay. That's Michael Castleberry. Shout out Michael Castleberry and crew.
Okay.
Up there. Open your earballs, because what we're going to discuss is the number one threat to the mortgage industry.
Interest rates.
This is the number one threat to housing affordability.
Lack of inventory.
Yet, even shows like ours until today have been remiss to discuss it. I know I've brought it up here and there. I've slid it in. I've gone down rabbit holes. But no, John. What do you think it is? What are you throwing out there?
Aliens and UFOs? Are you telling me we're finally going to talk about conspiracy theories?
If you want to.
It kind of is.
You may need to let me go out to your car for a minute if we're going to talk about that.
Car for a minute. You ain't coming back for about 45. Yes, today we are talking about the number one threat to the mortgage industry is climate change.
That's crazy, right? Think about that. Like, because you want to say, oh, it's interest rates. You want to say, because interest rates obviously impact affordability, right? We are all waiting for interest rates to come back down to the low sixes, high fives, at which point 4 million home buyers become quote unquote in the money. Like if you're a mortgage banker, you want to hear that in the money term. We want to talk about there's not enough inventory, that if we can figure out a way to incentivize home builders to build more homes, then we could solve for, if they were affordable homes, by the way, we could solve for some of the issues that we're facing with pricing and with just utter lack of inventory. But if we're looking at true risk, true threats, interest rates will come back down. They will, right? I don't know about the inventory. That's still a bit of a concern, but interest rates are not really a concern. But yes, climate change. And by the way, I'm not talking global warming. We're not gonna like debate that.
Mm-hmm.
Is global warming a thing? Oh, gee, global warming. It's pretty cold here. I don't know how warm it's getting. Like, okay, we don't need to discuss that. I'm not here. I'm not trying to hug trees. I'm not trying to shoot tree huggers.
Right.
Okay, but I do want to talk about climate change as just to, hey, make you say, open your eyes to it and know that collectively, if you're going to be in this industry for the next 5, 7, 10 years, this is something that is going to impact our clients and our customers. It's going to impact the way that we operate business. It's going to maybe even impact the availability of credit. Mm. And that's what we're going to discuss today. It's like, hey, look, I don't want to freak anybody out, but I mean, this shit is real and we're going to have to address it. Putting your head in the sand doesn't make it go away. It's always baffled me, like our buddies, our buddies that don't want to go to the doctor. They don't want to go in through annual physical. They're like, I'm not getting a colonoscopy. I'm like, but if you have something wrong with you, won't you want to know about it earlier?
Dummy, because if I don't know about it, it doesn't exist. Duh.
Is that how it works?
Yes, that's exactly what we think. If I don't look at it, it's not there. Therefore, it doesn't exist.
But you know that's not true, right?
Right, allegedly.
Allegedly. Okay. Yeah, so like not talking about something doesn't mean it goes away. Not talking about it doesn't mean it's not going to happen. So we're going to talk about it so that we're aware of it. And then collectively, more brains, more thought leaders can potentially come up with solutions and versus less. So this is what we're going to talk about, and it's climate change. Again, we're not talking global warming. Climate change. Facts. These are facts. You can look them up, right? We have data from 20 years ago, data from 100 years ago. We have data from last year and data from this year. Okay, and we have obviously our forecasts and our projections.
Hell yeah.
All right. Facts are this. Look at the number of catastrophic climate events that have transpired in the past 3 or 5 years, and has it been worse or has it been better than what it was 10 years ago at this time?
I'm gonna go ahead and say it's been worse for 300, Alex.
And I would hope it's a daily double. And you went for like $3,000.
I'll bet 50 cents.
I'll take Schwartz for 100, Alex. Pretty sure you mean S-words?
Yeah, Schwartz.
Schwartz, yeah. One of the greatest Saturday Night Live skits, by the way. Norm MacDonald and who I think was playing himself. I don't know who he was. No.
Tom Hanks.
Norm MacDonald is actually playing.
Sean Connery.
No. Someone else plays Sean Connery. Norm MacDonald plays not Tom Selleck, but
I don't know. You're ruining the joke. Just let it.
We're ruining. All right, so we're just gonna jump right in. Way to go. Now it's gonna bother me though.
It's fine. It'll come back.
We need Mark. If Mark Holmes was here, Mark's like an SNL nerd. Yeah, yeah, no, he's an SNL nerd. He would totally know it. Burt Reynolds.
There it is.
Norm MacDonald plays Burt Reynolds. Anyhow, back on climate change. Yes. So like you look at the current state of what's happening in the United States, like the current state of the United States. Wildfires, mudslides, floods, tornadoes, hurricanes. Okay, all of those and the magnitude of the damage that they're inflicting. And by damage, I mean like damage to property, damage to homes, damage to automobiles. Okay, this is a threat. This continues. It's going to be very difficult, A, to find affordable insurance for those homes. And this is what we're going to be talking about. But then there's also going to be difficult to get, this is the business side of the mortgage industry, the investors, right? Those that extend liquidity to the banking and housing industry, those homes that we finance, that's the collateral, right? That's what they can repossess, what we call it foreclosed, but they can repossess when and if someone's not making their payments. But what happens when that collateral is at risk of total, like just
annihilation
due to wildfire, right? Due to a flood being swept away. I have a friend of mine, her home was swept away. The insurance company like, well, I need you to send me a picture of the damage.
I can't. It's not here anymore.
The home's gone.
Yeah, down the street.
Yeah, yeah. We don't know where it went. It went back into the Gulf of Mexico.
Damn.
Is where it went. And what's crazy is she owned two homes next door. One of them got picked up off the foundation and swept away. The other one was damaged, and she was able to send the insurance company all the pictures they needed so she can get it covered, get it rebuilt, et cetera. But when we're looking at climate change and the threat that it poses, we're going to like do a deep dive. I live in Florida. You live in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
But you grew up in Massachusetts.
Yep.
Okay, so in Massachusetts, do you remember any type of like...
Yeah, Hurricane Andrew in 1993, that was an outlier. And then we have like blizzards and shit, but like nothing like it is now.
Hurricane Andrew made it up to Massachusetts?
Yeah, and it was like bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember, but that was like an anomaly. Malcolm Gladwell, that author, you'd be like quoting, he's like, outlier. That would be an outlier.
That would be an outlier. I had no idea. I mean, I remember Hurricane Andrew. I remember where I was. Yeah. I remember my cousins who had their home in Homestead absolutely demolished.
Mm-hmm.
I remember reading about it in the Orlando Sentinel.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going down to Homestead a year later to visit those cousins, and that home was still demolished.
Yeah.
And they were living, by the way, they were living in a swanky-ass condo in Key Biscayne afterwards, though. And that was pretty pimp to go visit them, because I preferred visiting them at the swanky condo in Key Biscayne. But yeah, no, I grew up in Florida, like born and raised, with the exception of like one semester abroad. So I was over in England for like literally 3 months of my life. Lived in Atlanta, Georgia for 2 years, and I lived in West Palm Beach. So West Palm Beach is still Florida. So of my life, I have literally spent 24 months not living in Florida. But the first 20 years of my life, there's no such thing as a hurricane.
It rained every day.
With the exception of, hold on, Andrew, we talk about that. That was 92.
Yeah.
So in 1992, I was 14 years old. But other than that, like Central Florida, where I live, the Orlando area, nah.
It used to rain every day back in the day at 2 p.m. for 45 minutes on the dot, and then the sun used to come out. It doesn't happen like that anymore.
You don't think so? Mm-mm. Oh, I don't have that impression. Really? Yeah, like once we hit the summer months, I'm pretty confident it's going to rain every day starting at 4 o'clock. But nonetheless, hurricanes, since 2000, and definitely four, since 2004, Central Florida, two or three storms a year.
Yeah.
And what have we seen? I've seen the insurance from my home go from $900
skyrocket
to $1,800. From $1,800, hold on, I'm going back a ways, to $4,800 to insure the same home.
Hold on, your shit was $900? What was it, the 1800s? This, oh my God. Hold on,
my son was born in 2005. So I would have purchased this home in 2004.
Are you serious?
October of 2004.
Home insurance?
Nationwide. Nationwide.
What is on? Yeah. $900?
Nationwide was $900.
Blasphemy.
Chris Rebush wrote the policy.
Bullshit.
Shout out to Chris Rebush.
At the time, was that a lot or was that like fair? Or was like not?
Dude, I have no
$900?
Idea. $900. It quickly went to $1,800 because we had, you know, just
yeah, right,
hurricanes.
Right, yeah,
boom,
right.
Boom, boom.
Holy shit.
Right. Today, to insure that same exact house cost, I still own it. $4,800 to insure it.
That seems like an increase.
Yeah, I was just up in Jacksonville for Mother's Day with my in-laws, talking to my mother-in-law. She's like, can you believe that? She doesn't talk that way, by the way.
Back in my day. Yeah, but it's
like,
always
she's like, can you believe our insurance just went up 65%? I go, yeah, I can. Like, yep. Like, I can understand that. And why is this? It's not necessarily because insurance companies, which they are this, are greedy, grubby, and money hungry.
It's because we have hailstones the size of volleyballs hitting our roofs. That's why.
Well, we have that. We have hurricanes. We also have a pretty unscrupulous roofing industry and a bunch of attorneys who like to sue those money hungry, grubby insurance companies and force them to pay claims. So then they start paying claims. They have to make the money back.
You don't need a new roof. Have you seen the new thing where the guy just gets up and they start spraying some shit on your roof and it seals it for another 5 years?
I have not seen that.
You will tonight, though.
Will I? Yeah. Probably because the creepy...
yeah, they're listening.
They are listening. Yeah, they are listening. No, so let's kind of get back onto the serious topic of things. So I was sharing with you, like, growing up in Florida, like, yes, the past 20 years, I've seen 10x more storms than I did the first 20 years of me growing up and living in Florida. And then you start looking at the wildfires in California, you look at the floods in Houston, you look at the tornadoes throughout the Midwest. And I mean, yes, climate change is going to make homeownership less affordable because that guy or girl who's buying my house, yes, they are buying the house for $100,000 more than what I bought it for because I bought the house 20 years ago. But, they also are going to pay four times more money to insure that home. Okay, four times. So if it went from $75 to $150, from $150 to $300, it's actually like $375 a month. Let me put that in perspective. And let's just use $100 versus $300. $100 versus $300 is equal to, on what that home is worth, to roughly $300,000. Is worth about $200. I'm sorry, 1% in interest rate. That $200 is roughly $35,000 in purchase price. So when we're looking at affordability, we have to look at the cost to insure. The cost to insure is going to be indicative based on the number of claims that have to be paid out. The number of claims being paid out are, well, how many catastrophic events are transpiring. Well, with climate change, which climate is changing, right? Whether it's induced by global warming or not, again, not for this conversation, not for this podcast episode, but climates are changing. And as that climate changes, that impacts affordability across the board. Big issue, right? So that's a big issue. Just don't know where we fix it. Don't know how we fix it. But that is something for the next administration and the next administration and that state agency that regulates the insurance industry collectively to have to come together. Okay, but let's think about this. This is probably the bigger concern. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. Okay, they are the quasi-government agencies that back the bulk of the mortgages being written today. And if it's not being backed by Fannie or Freddie, it's being backed by Jenny. Jenny Mae's how lenders securitize, basically turn a mortgage into an investment, right? Turn a mortgage into a bond that a pension company or that a pension or life insurance company would want to invest in. Okay. Jenny Mae's where you hold the FHA loans, the VA loans, and USDA loans. So when I look at conventional conforming, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, I look at USDA, FHA, and VA. Those loan programs make up roughly 75-80% of all loans being originated in today's day and age. The U.S. government backs these bonds, right? These are quasi-government agencies. And right now, Fannie and Freddie have been in conservatorship for 15-plus years. So that means they truly are, instead of being quasi-government, for the most part, let's just call them government agencies. The FHFA is their conservator, and that's a government entity. Okay, so the U.S. government does one thing amazingly well that no other country, think about this, no other country in the U.S. does this. I mean,
Yep, sounds like American to me.
Sounds like you just cheated your way through 10th grade geography
exactly.
Class.
God,
by the way, I cheated my way through geometry and geography. But I probably appreciated geography way more than I did geometry. But
the whole world,
the whole world.
There you go.
In the whole entire world, we are the only country that offers a long-term debt instrument. That's a 15, 20, or 30-year fixed mortgage. You may be able to get a 25 or 30-year mortgage, but your rate's only fixed for 3 or 5 years. Canada, UK, Australia. Okay, like those are probably the economies that are most similar to ours. Don't know enough about Italy, Spain, Portugal, but I can tell you within Europe, there's no 30-year fixed instruments, 15, 20-year fixed instruments. That's because those countries, they may do things like they'll back for health coverage, but they're not backing the purchase of primary residences and real estate. And for us in the U.S., it's the number one way for us to generate wealth is through home ownership. And we do so because the government steps in and does one thing really well. They offer the liquidity facility. We figured out a way to let banks and lenders create loans, sell those loans off to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, or Jenny Mae, if we're talking about a government loan. They then pool all those loans together. Then they securitize them, turn them into a bond, and then they let people invest in that bond.
Widgetize them.
Yep. So instead of John Coleman, who wants to own some investments in real estate, instead of John backing one loan, no, John gets to own a bond that backs 10,000 loans, right? That mitigates John's risk. Because John's like, look, I can't afford if one person goes in default, but if I owned a bond and that bond represented 10,000 homeowners, I could probably stomach of those 10,000, 200 of them going into default, and that bond still performs. It's a good investment. That's how the U.S. mortgage industry at a pretty basic high level, how it operates. Well, part of the risk assessment is obviously things like credit score, debt to income ratio, loan to value, whether or not the home is a primary home or an investment property. Like these are all risk factors that go into it. And all of those homes and those investments, all those investments have homes attached to them. The homes end up becoming the collateral, right? You have a car loan. Well, you have a car loan, which means you don't have full title to your car because your lender has that title. That's their collateral. If John doesn't make his car payment, then their lender's going to go call the repo guy. Repo guy's going to show up at your house at 2 a.m. and they're going to steal your car and all the weed in it, right? That's what happens. They take it back. They repo it. And the mortgage world will be foreclosed, okay? So it's important to really understand that home is the collateral. That home is how we are able to get interest rates at 7% and not 17%. Credit cards are at 17% because do you know what collateral is attached to a credit card?
The shit you buy on it?
No.
Nothing.
You could go out and buy $20,000 worth of stuff.
Yeah.
And theoretically, 2 years down the road, you quit making your credit card payment.
Mm-hmm.
No one's going to come and ask you for your stuff.
Let's go.
Theoretically. Now, there's fraud and there's foreclosure fraud and there's people who would try to work the system and there's judges and attorneys and auditors who can step in and be like, wait a minute. But for the most part, the reason why credit card interest rates are so high is because there's no collateral. Homes, interest rates are so low because there is collateral. And up until 2008, it was always assumed, especially on the primary home, the reason why rates are so low is because who would ever give up their home? Like, I mean, that's Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Shelter's pretty high up. Pretty high up, meaning, well, that's my shelter. I may let my car go. I may not pay my credit card. I may cancel my gym membership. I may shut off my cable. But I may even not pay my water bill or my electric bill.
Get rid of the spouse, too.
Maybe get rid of a spouse or two. I guess you live in Utah. You said you're going to get rid of a spouse or two.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, like, your home is, so that's why we are able to finance at 97%. Mm-hmm. VA, USDA loans, 100%. Right? FHA, 96.5%. Like, we can finance a lot of the purchase at low interest rates because the government backs it. And there's collateral. Let's get back on to climate change. And let's talk about what happens when that collateral becomes riskier.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens if it's a total loss due to a wildfire? I mean, I just saw this. I was in Dana Point, California. By the way, absolutely gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. That's just south of Laguna Beach. I've been to California 7-8 times in my life. This was the one trip, and maybe because I went in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, now I know why people live here.
Sounds expensive.
Well, California is mad expensive. But I had been to California prior in September, or I'd been there in like January, February, mm-hmm. where it's just like brown and everything was dead. And I was like, well, why does someone want to live in an area that's just brown and dead? Well, I hadn't been in the spring where it was green. So I got green, I got blue, I got mountains. I was like, oh, sign me up. So anyhow, when I was out in California, I saw right outside of the whale watching boat I was on, two of the homes, these are like $10, $20 million houses, were sliding into the ocean.
Save me.
Y'all gonna save it now. Like, shit's dead. Like,
dumbass.
Yeah, good luck living there. So as we have the mudslides and we have the tornadoes and we have the floods and we have the wildfires, we have the hurricanes, those assets, those collateral, those homes, there's somebody with their MIT degree, somebody who went to, you know, University of Pennsylvania.
Or University of Tampa.
No, they probably went to university. They probably went to Penn. They probably went to Harvard. They probably went to MIT. They got like nerdy degrees, like actuary science.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? UCF.
UCF
has actuary science.
I knew, of course.
I'm sure they went to University of Tampa too, John. They did. Do you even know what University of Tampa's mascot is?
A Spartan.
Okay, so they are a University of Tampa Spartan.
What are you, a knight?
Yes.
Isn't that the same thing? False.
Okay, let's not go down that rabbit hole. Okay, I'm sorry to knock University of Tampa.
I'm sorry to knock University of Central Florida.
Yeah. Do you know what my son told me at University of Tampa? I probably shouldn't say
it's
loud.
Yeah, it's when the smart, it's all the rich kids go.
He says where all the hot,
yeah,
rich girls go that can't get into Florida State, UCF, or UF.
That's where I met my wife.
Yeah. Boom, boom. Yeah, okay. All right. Yeah. So those that have their degrees in actuary science.
Yeah.
Okay, they're sitting back right now running spreadsheets, and they are like chewing the nails off their fingers because they're looking at all of the additional risk. So this episode's about, hey, we need to be aware of this. So let me just make some hypotheses. Okay. Let me just like project out forward. I'm not an actuary scientist. I'm not Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. I'm not a bond issuer. I do invest in some bonds. I don't do it. My financial advisor does it. And I always ask him, like, bro, what are you doing? I'm 45 years old. Now he talks about something about hedging and balancing and being diversified.
Wolf
I don't
of Wall
know.
Street.
Yeah. Hopefully not Wolf of Wall Street. I would like to know my money is safely invested. Shout out to Caleb Chapman, who is my yeah. financial advisor.
Yeah.
But no, I own some of those Ginnie Mae securities. I own some Fannie Mae securities, and that's part of the investment strategy. And they are called hedges, by the way, and it's a way to balance out the other trades that maybe would go a little bit riskier. So anyhow, I'm not one of those people, but here's what I do know. I know just like insurance companies aren't in the business of losing money,
mm-hmm.
The purchasers of bonds are not in the business Mm-mm. of losing money. Warren Buffett's not in the business of losing money. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are not in the business of losing money. In fact, they're conservative of the FHFA. That is why they're put in place to make sure that those fools don't lose money. And if you read the earnings reports, they've been doing a phenomenal job over the past decade of making money. Right, they remind me of Zeke when he was good. Like, remember when he was good on the mm-hmm. Cowboys and he was always like doing the feed me sign?
Yeah, now full circle. Now I pay him pennies on the dollar to get 3 yard losses.
Well, you know what happened? He jumped into the Salvation Army. Ever since then, it all went downhill. I was at that game on the field
Dumbass.
Wearing my Christmas suit and got a Thumbs up kudos from Bob Costas because it was Sunday Night Football, but that's a whole nother fun story to tell. And anyhow, I feel like Fanny and Freddie have been like Zeke back when he was good on the Cowboys, just feed me, feed me, feed me. So those entities aren't into losing money. But what's going to happen when they purchased a loan from a certain bank or lender? That loan got packaged and securitized and sold to an investor, whether it's a pension fund, whether it's life insurance, or whether it's just an individual investor like me. And all of a sudden, I'm learning that that bond isn't really worth what it was worth when they sold it to me, because it's been deemed that instead of 200 loans are not performing, 2,000 loans have just been destroyed
and are floating in the
by
ocean
some climate event. And by the way, the cost to rebuild that asset is actually much greater than what the insurance policy was willing to pay out. The mortgage owed is greater than what it's going to be to actually rebuild, and the homeowner's walking.
Oh my God.
And the homeowner's walking. So I, as a lender, like that bond, that loan, that one loan was worth 400 grand. It's going to cost 600 grand to rebuild. The dude owes 500 grand on their mortgage. And at best, if the insurance company doesn't go belly up, because that's also a risk, at best, I'm going to have to fight to get 400 grand. That means I'm taking a $100,000 plus loss, maybe a $200,000 loss on this particular loan. And I have 2,000 of them in this package of 10,000. That's a catastrophic event. Like, not because the home was lost, to me, the investor. So what could we see? Well, depending on where someone's buying, you better believe those actuary scientists are going to have zip codes and geocodes, and you'll start seeing risk assessors on certain zip codes. Oh, you're buying in 305. You're buying in 727. Right? I don't know, give me something in Louisiana. Give me something in Houston. Give me something in Iowa where they have tornadoes. Give me something in Northern California where they have fires. Like, give me those zip codes. All of a sudden, hey, we'll lend there, but it's an extra X quarter percent in interest rate, an extra 100 basis points or 1% of the loan size, an additional upfront cost because we have deemed this to be in a high risk area. Well, do you think that's pro home affordability, or do you think that's going to make housing less affordable?
I'm going to go with the second thing you said for 400, Alex.
You've now made $700, John, and I wish you would have done the daily double and gone all in, because you would have had that answer right.
That won't even cover the spread for my new homeowner's insurance.
It will not. Yeah. Well, that's a whole nother concern. Right? There's people out there that don't have mortgages, and you know what they've done about their insurance? This is baffling. This is asinine.
What? Haven't had any?
They don't have any.
Bullshit.
They do not. There are, like, check out Alta Research. Right, Alta does a great job, or Alto, really? I think Alto.
So yeah,
I
own my home. I don't need no damn insurance.
You don't. I mean,
that's what they think.
Yeah, it's like anything in life. You don't need it until you do.
Right.
Yeah, but there's a lot of seniors. There are a lot of seniors right now. Think about this: you bought that home for $200,000 in 1992. By the way, it's the house I want to buy. It's in St. Pete Beach, Florida. It's now selling for $1.8 million.
Shit.
Okay. So the flood insurance on that may be 12 grand a year.
What?
The homeowner's insurance on that may be 8 grand a year. So it's $20,000 to insure Do you think somebody living on their fixed income is going to be shelling over $1,833 a month?
No.
For insurance? No. But now that asset is uninsured. What happens when the next flood happens, when the next hurricane comes, when the next tropical storm comes? Like, that's their biggest asset. That thing's worth millions of dollars. Now, you know what they have? Piece of land. Now the land's worth something. Like, that is the benefit of real estate, location, 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 but it's not worth 1.8 million, right? It may be worth 1 million, right? Because that house, that's what's crazy about homes that are on the water. Like, the house itself may only be worth about $300,000 or $400,000.
Sticks.
Yeah, but it's like that lot's worth $1 or $1.2 million. But yeah, they just like, look, it's not worth it for them. They made that business decision, or they can't afford to insure it. But that doesn't impact Fannie and Freddie. That doesn't impact housing affordability. Like, it doesn't. So we're not talking about it. Just a little sidebar. But, you know, things that we're talking about is when the actuaries and when Fannie and Freddie, because they have a fiduciary responsibility to their stakeholders, they have a fiduciary responsibility to their investors, right, to only be making good loans and good sound financial decisions, they're going to have to look at certain geo codes, areas, zip codes, et cetera. And they're going to have to say, well, in this market, although an FHA loan will allow 96.5% financing, we're only going to do 90% because we have to mitigate our risk. Or in this particular market, we're not going to allow 95% financing on a conventional loan. We're only going to allow 85% because this area is prone to wildfires. Now, all of a sudden, it's making the barrier of entry much harder in those areas, which then lowers your buyer pool, which we live in a market that's called the supply and demand market. Well, if there's X amount of homes on for sale, but there's way less buyers because the best financing you can get is 15% down, you don't offer any of the 3, 3.5, or 5% down options, well, now there's less buyers. So now that could very well deteriorate my home's value. Like, this is just a lot to take in.
Hold on. So what I'm hearing from you is that people, like 10, 15 years from now, when climate change gets worse and all the beaches are eroded, it'll cost way too much money to live in Florida. Therefore, like, there'll be a mass exodus and mad people will just move to, like, Delaware and, like, flyover states. That's what I hear.
You know, it's very interesting. You and I could have some fun with this. And maybe when we're out in Vegas, we can, after I lose all my money at the craps table, and you and I can go sit down at the lobby bar, spend $30 on a drink, and we can solve all the world's problems at one time.
That's what we think.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, that's the big unknown. I mean, the purpose of today's show, like most of our shows, like, we don't have the answers. This is not a point where I'm like, y'all, this is the answer.
And now's the point of the show where I provide 3 bullet points on how to avoid all catastrophe.
Yeah. I mean, is the answer to go find something high, dry, not on the coast, that's wet enough that you're not going to have a fire, but it's dry enough that you're not going to flood? I have no idea.
Landlocked piece of shit. Everybody's going to be living on a mountain in Dakota or some shit.
Hey, don't get me wrong. I would love to live. Maybe not. Certain parts of South Dakota, like Sioux Falls, would be
that's
nice.
That's where the really super rich people live now. They're all going to, like, Wyoming. Bozeman, right?
Bozeman, Montana.
Because they're building their bunkers because they know.
Yeah, you're going to find me in Cody, Wyoming. Where you'll find me.
Are you going to build a bunker?
I don't want a freaking bunker. No way. No, but I would live out to Cody, Wyoming. I mean, that wouldn't suck. Sunlight Basin, bro, heading out to 7D Ranch. Yeah, you're 7D is gonna turn into 8D because Dustin's gonna be there. Yeah, it's the 7 Dominics and Dustin.
It does. Yeah. But so are homes like out there that don't really have a lot of, like, you know, prone to, like, catastrophic events. Is the homeowner's insurance, is that less? Are they less risky? So
yes, man, insurance is all about making money. So it's a risk versus reward. They're not trying to get rich off of one person. They're trying to make a little bit off of everybody.
Right.
Yeah. So, yes, if I live in an area where they're like, well, we don't have wildflowers. You got me thinking of 7D Ranch, and I'm like, oh, yeah, wildflowers. Yeah. You don't have wildfires. You're not prone to flooding, hurricanes, or tornadoes. The assumption would be, yes, that home is going to be cheaper to insure. Now, if the home's a freaking pueblo that was built in, like, 1827, way more expensive to insure, because how are you going to rebuild that back into its
fucking mud and spit, dummy? What you think?
I have no idea. Yeah, I hope there's a cheap mud and spit contractor out there. Right. And there's plenty of mud and spit available to build it. Yeah, but yes, to answer your question, it is pretty much that basic. But we have to, as an industry, right, recognize. So we have homeowners who tune in. Mm-hmm. We have home buyers or want to be home buyers. By the way, if you want to be a home buyer and you have questions, hey, we're a good resource for you. We have home buyers that tune in, realtors that tune in, financial advisors tune in. Hell, my brother-in-law Matt tunes in. What's up, Kanji? Like, he tunes in. He's a homeowner. And then obviously the loan officers, the mortgage industry, and everyone who supports the mortgage industry, like, we are their source, whether you like it or not. That's where they're tuning into. And this is a, hey, we should know about this. And if you read any trade publication and you get to, like, the third page,
right?
Yeah, there's countless research and articles, right? Like, I've known about this for 2-3 years now. By the way, if I was Tony Soprano, just finished that show, ending sucked, but it'd be 2-3. But if you're on page 2 or 3, then you would know about this because we've been talking about 2 or 3 years.
So, like, in 10 years, I'm not going to be able to afford my homeowner's insurance, so I'm going to, like, have to move out?
Depends. I mean, you know, you're at least high and dry. You're in Central Florida and you're not on the coast.
It does still go up though.
Now, what I will tell you, your home may go up by a threefold because maybe in 10 years, you now have oceanfront property.
Ah, shit. You're right.
I mean, what do you live, about 40 miles from the ocean?
30.
30? I mean, so, yeah, if we get the sea levels to rise by about 18 inches.
I got Lake Jessup and shit.
Oh, Lake Jessup's going to bring nothing but alligators into your backyard. You don't want that. Alligators and sharks and salt water?
There's no sharks in...
Yes, there are sharks in the ocean.
Yeah, but not in...
New Smyrna Beach. Right, you live 40 minutes away from New Smyrna Beach, shark bite capital of the world.
I don't go to New Smyrna Beach. You know why? Because they let people drive on the beach. Shame on you, Florida.
I go to New Smyrna Beach... And I don't go to the drive side of the beach. You just have to go further south, head towards Bethune. Anyhow, can you imagine, John, you live 40 minutes from New Smyrna Beach. That is the shark bite capital of the world. Look it up, y'all. Yeah. And you live 3 miles from Lake Jessup?
Yeah.
Do you know that per capita, or not per capita, per capita, like, I think it's like per cubic yard, there are more alligators in Lake Jessup than any other lake in Florida.
Yet I never see them.
Do you not drive over 417 Bridge?
I never see them pop. I never see them like doing
my
that.
My family and I, for the past 12 years, we have, like, how many can we count? Like, one day we counted 16.
Really?
Yeah, it's a 3 mile bridge that goes over there. Yeah, we have 16 of them.
Shout out alligators.
Shout out to alligators. But yeah, imagine you in 10 years, this climate change keeps going the way it's going and doing what it's doing. You could have sharks from New Smyrna, alligators from Lake Jessup. Now, all of a sudden, you have lake and oceanfront property.
Yeah, perfect. Then I don't need the podcast to generate income. I'll be like, come to this waterfront beach property where I have lakes, alligators, sharks, and orangutans.
Nah, but this is probably a good way for us to put a bow on today's episode. Like, I mean, we can't solve all the world's problems in 45 minutes.
Yes, you can. Just buy electric vehicles and have windmills everywhere.
Probably not, but nonetheless... Nonetheless, y'all need to know about it.
Yeah.
Y'all need to understand it's a real thing. And then that way you're not like sucker punched when you start to see the industry change, buyer behavior change, consumer behavior change, sellers start making decisions all based on the impact of climate change. And it's coming. We're not putting this in the box and shipping it back where it came from. So let's at least be aware of it. Obviously, the thought leaders will get together and the regulators will get together and the what do you call those people? Legislatures. The legislators will get together.
Allegedly.
And let's see what they can do. The rest of us get to bear witness to it and obviously be ready to pivot when and how necessary. But let's at least be aware of it. Climate change. That's today's episode.
Well said, Dustin.
Perfect. Hey, y'all, if you love what we're doing, do us a favor. Share this. Go ahead and tell someone else about it. Make sure you have subscribed to our YouTube channel. We are TLOP on YouTube. Make sure you are, you know, subscribed on Spotify and Apple. We have a newsletter. The newsletter is free. I write it. Go to our website, TLOP Online. You can subscribe to the newsletter, sign up for it. And then more specifically, if you're a mortgage loan originator and you are looking for sales training and coaching with people like me and top producers in your industry, you want to learn our secrets to success, what we did to get to where we are and what we're doing today to stay on top. Dollar for dollar, bang for buck. There is nothing better out there in the market. I designed it specifically for it. It's called the TLOP MLO Coaching Community. Come join us. Invest in yourself. Invest in your future success. He's John Coleman. I'm Dustin Owen. That's all the time we have for you today. We do look forward to catching you on the next episode. Peace.